It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
On the front porch today, and we're sitting down to visit with a friend of the show, a gentleman we had on a couple of years back, maybe almost close to 2.5 years ago, an author, Jeffrey Stevens. And I was excited when I got an email from your people talking about a new book and maybe setting up an interview, not knowing that we had had a chance to visit before. And I thought, why would we not visit again? I had such a fun time our first go around. So, Jeff, thanks so much for stepping back on the front porch and visiting again.
Well, thank you so much for having me again. We had such a good time last time. I think they kind of dropped the ball not getting back to you sooner.
Well, we'll catch up again. And for our listeners, give a little idea of kind of your path in life, if you will. I know that you're a native of New York, but you've been between New York and Connecticut through your years and now in Greenwich.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about growing up for our listeners that maybe didn't catch you the first go around.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I grew up in a poor section of the Bronx in New York, went out to Penn State to go to college, so I realized that, you know, there's more to life than just the city. So I wound up, after I came back, moving up to Connecticut, where I've been for 40 years. I've been a lawyer for a long time, and so please don't hold that against me, but along the way I always wrote. And about 20 years or so ago, I met a gentleman quite by accident, and it turned out he was a literary agent, and this mutual friend said, you know, Jeff's been writing some things, why don't you take a look? And the rest is history, and, you know, recently my 8th novel was published, and so it's been a fun ride. When we met on the air a couple of years ago, as you say, we were talking about a book that was kind of a father-son treasure hunt. And now the new series I'm working on is more like a thriller, a CIA agent, and that kind of thing. And so it's been fun, and it's been getting great reviews. It's called Enemies Among Us, and people are really enjoying it, which I hope they do, obviously.
Yeah, it's I'll tell you this much. I haven't got far into it. I got a digital copy of it, and so I've been able to kind of get started on it. And for the first three scenarios you set us up with, I'm in. So it grabs your attention very quickly, and already wondering where exactly it's going to take us. So exciting stuff, and glad to hear it's getting such good reviews. Talk more about that book as we move along through the show, but kind of the path to you wrote all along for our listeners that didn't catch you the first time. You literally were writing throughout your entire life. Talk about that experience and some of the things you were doing.
It's kind of, people think I'm a little strange, but yes, when I was a little boy, I would write puppet shows, and my friend and I would perform these throughout our elementary school. I would write the script, and it was really kind of funny because people who are old enough to remember what a diorama is, it was really basically a cardboard box that you cut out the back,
right,
and in it you create a scene. And then my friend Kenny and I would go from class to class, and what we'd do is we'd put this box on the teacher's desk, and we'd kneel down behind the desk, and we'd hold up the puppets, and obviously we would talk the two parts. And I would have this script that I would obviously have hand-printed, and I'd be throwing pages across the floor as we get to the next page and the next page. And it was really a lot of fun. And then in high school and college, I wrote. And when I graduated college, my dad said, so what do you want to do? And I said, really, I'd like to be a novelist. And he kind of shook his head because, as I say, we came from very limited circumstances, and it was very tough for me to get through college. I worked. I borrowed money. My parents helped me, obviously. And he said, look, you know, novelists don't make any money, and too many of them drink too much. So I tell you what, you go find yourself a profession, and if you want to write, you write and see what comes of that. And so my second choice was to be an attorney. And I've had a fun career, I must say. I know people don't always love attorneys, but nor do I in many instances, but I've had a fun time with it. And I kept writing. And as I say, it came to pass that I met somebody who said, well, let me see if I can get something published. And so the funny part of the story is I gave him this first book, and he absolutely loved it. Bob DeForio was his name, older gentleman. And he absolutely loved the book. And he said, this is great. And after about 3 months, he said, I'm really sorry. I can't sell this for a dollar to anybody. I love it, but no one's buying it. You got anything else? And I said, well, you know, I've got this book about a CIA agent based on a guy I knew in New York City. And he said, well, let me give that a go. And it got published right away. And so since then, I've been publishing a lot of different books in that series, and then The Fool's Errand, which you were kind enough to talk with me about back in, I think, 2022 or 2021. And then I went back into the spy business, and so I wrote a book called The Handler, which introduced a new agent, which Nick Reagan is the main character, and people kind of liked it, and so I wrote another. The sequel is the new one called Enemies Among Us. And that's also featuring Nick Reagan and his partner, Carol Gellos. And, they're page-turners, as you say. I mean, the point of this is not just to educate, but the point of this is to entertain. I mean, these are, you know, this is not War and Peace. This is fun stuff. And I hope people enjoy it when they read it.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's a splash to start, as I mentioned, in the new book, Enemies Among Us. You talk about educating. You mentioned that just briefly, along with entertaining. You have some of that inside sauce, how the sausage is made in some of these situations, which I think is fascinating for people to kind of get into.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I guess partly because I've been an attorney for so long, and I've been in so many different deals, whether it be in Washington or New York or up here in Connecticut, and also some of the people I met, including this gentleman who really did work for the CIA. He's now passed. He was a former Green Beret. He was a true American hero. And it's not as if, just understand, it's not as if he turned over any state secrets to me, but he did give me some real insight into how it works and how the intelligence world works. And, you know, we all love James Bond, let's face it. We love James Bond, and we should, because it's great stuff. But the people who work in the intelligence community are not running around in tuxedos and swilling martinis and, you know, or beautiful women in gowns. That's not what it's about. These people, they work in the shadows. They work trying to find information to prevent bad things from happening to us. Just like our military, they're there to protect us. And it's really incredible stuff that they do when you think about it, because so many of them give up so much of their lives to protect us. And it was interesting, when I wrote The Handler, it was during the pandemic. It goes back a little bit. And when it first started, and I said, I think people would really enjoy a page-turner that takes them like a globe-trotting adventure around the world and so on and so on. And so, without giving too much away, it's about this mastermind terrorist who means us no good and is plotting attacks in the United States. And my publisher said to me, you know, gee, Jeff, I mean, this is a pretty good book, but do you really think, I mean, don't you think this terrorism thing is a little played out? And I said, no. It is definitely not played out, pal. The deal is that our intelligence community is just doing a better job. We may have been blindsided on 9/11, but since then, you would not believe, I mean, the public would not believe, I can't even believe how many plots have been stopped in their tracks and have protected us because they had the proper information and because these people work so tirelessly to protect us. So he said, well, okay, you know, let's give it a go. And it worked out, and so that's why I did the next book. And Enemies Among Us brings back certain characters as well as Nick, Reagan, and Carol, but it also looks at some of the problems within our own government, within our own structure, within big business, within big pharma. And that's why it's called Enemies Among Us, because, you know, the enemy isn't always abroad. Sometimes they're here. Pardon me. So anyway, so that's kind of the way I approached it. And so I want to give people stuff to think about, Rocky, as well as, you know, entertaining them, as well as having fun. I mean, you know, these clearly are action-packed books, but they also have to have something to think about. Otherwise, why read it?
Right, and with that inside source and kind of knowing these people and what their lives are like, at least to some degree, will open eyes, I think, for a lot of people. Because, you know, I'm sitting in the middle of Kansas, and I'm worried about when I get to go play my next round of golf. not thinking about what all is going on in the world that is letting me worry about the next round of golf.
You're absolutely right. I mean, look what's happened in the last couple of years. I mean, there's no way to understate the grimness of what's occurring. I mean, you've got Putin murdering thousands of civilians. Not, this isn't a war of soldiers against soldiers. Putin is murdering civilians in the Ukraine in an unprovoked attack that our government really did nothing to prevent. And now what do? We give them billions of dollars that are unaccounted for, because let's face it, I don't want to get too political, but this guy Zelensky, I mean, he was a talk show host, for God's sake. He was a comedian in the Ukraine. Yeah. His election was almost a joke in and of itself. And now he can't even account for all the money we give him. I'd like to know what's going on there. And then you've got terrorists coming and killing and maiming and torturing all these people in Israel. And so there's a war going on there. And now Iran's getting directly involved. I mean, there's some bad stuff going on in the world. We've got to worry about China and so forth. So if we are not on top of our game in terms of the military, in terms of the CIA and the NSA, and the FBI, you know, it's going to be dangerous. And when you've got a border where they just walked across, and we know for a fact, I mean, I'm not making this up. This isn't a novelist trying to scare people. We know for a fact that there are thousands of people on terrorist watch lists who are now in this country. And, like, keep in mind, it only took 9 guys to take down the 2 World Trade Towers.
Yeah.
9 guys. So you got thousands in this country who don't love us. And so it's time for us to wake up and smell the coffee. And so that's a little bit of what Enemies Among Us is about. And I'm not trying to terrify people, but we do have to realize that, you know, we don't protect ourselves, we're not going to be protected. No one else is going to do it. You know, it's very interesting. I laugh sometimes, you know, when there are tragedies that occur around the world, whether it's an earthquake or a hurricane or a tsunami, who's always there? The United States of America. We are the world's good guy. We're there with money. We're there with supplies. When something bad happens in the U.S., anybody ever help us that you can remember? I can't.
I mean,
a bridge goes down in Baltimore.
Yes.
I don't see anyone from another country saying, we have technology that will help you move this more quickly or help you repair it faster. I don't hear any of that. I don't hear anything when we have houses ripped off their foundations in the middle of the country because of tornadoes. You know, I don't see China coming and saying, well, you're such a good customer of ours, you buy all this stuff from us, we thought we would, you know, send you some aid. Nothing. Zero. So let's face it, we're in this alone, and we got to stop fighting with each other, take care of ourselves, and this way we could deal with the world more effectively, because right now we're not doing that.
Man, that is as spot on as I could hear it said. I'll respond with an amen for lack of better words. But it is scary, and while I joke about the round of golf, it is something our family talks about a lot. And where is this going to go, and how is it going to get healed? And that's still the big question mark that everybody's trying to answer at this point. Jeff, I'm going to jump in real quickly and get a break. We'll come back and continue our visit on the front porch with Jeffrey Stevens. And now we return to our visit on the front porch with Jeffrey Stevens.
You know, you have people, and I know I'm not saying anything original here, folks, so please forgive me for being trite, but there are so many people. I mean, I have members of my own family that, you know, I have a sister, I adore her, and she's an intelligent woman, and I cannot have a political discussion with her. My wife's sister, we cannot have a political discussion with her. There's none of the give and take that there used to be. There's no more JFK saying, you know, ask not what your country could do for you. Now it's every man for himself. We have crooks in office. I'm not going to name names, but I wouldn't say anything about Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, for example. But we have crooks in office, and they're taking care of themselves, but the country isn't being taken care of. You know, now they want to bribe voters by paying off their student loans. I have a question, and this is off the topic of my book, but this is one that I always pose to people when they tell me these things. You know, well, this is wonderful. he's taking the pressure off of these people. Let me ask a question to you, Rocky, and to your audience in general. Let's say there's a guy who couldn't afford to go to college, and he became something useful in life instead of a philosopher or an art history major. Let's say he became a carpenter or a plumber. And let's say this plumber went out and he had a lease a Ford F-150. Now, he couldn't go to college, so he doesn't have student debt, but he's got debt on his equipment. He's got a lease on his F-150. Why is no one paying that off?
There is no answer for that, right, Jeff?
Right. I mean, seriously. I mean, yeah. Really, you think, and by the way, this guy is working and paying taxes, so some jerk could go to school in Boston or in California and study art history or sociology, which really, you know, that's very, very useful to our country right now. And yet this poor guy gets up every morning at 6, goes to work, pays his debts, and pays his taxes. I mean, how do you think he feels about those dollars going to pay off these student loans? I tell you, I'd be furious. I worked my way through college, and I paid off all my loans. I have two sons. I worked very hard to put the money away so that I could send them to college, and so that when they graduated, they had no debt of any kind. I said, here you go, guys. Here's a car. Here's a diploma. Now go make a living. You know, I didn't want them living home anymore. I didn't, you know, all that stuff you hear now with the snowflakes. But the fact is, I mean, I'm furious about it. But I think about working class people who didn't go to college because they opted for a trade, and now their tax dollars are going to pay off student debt. It's just beyond my comprehension. And somehow, Joe Biden thinks this is going to endear him to the American public? Really? But you try and say this to people, and they say, well, you know, they have Trump derangement syndrome. I'm never voting for Trump, no matter how good he is, so I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. And I just look at them like, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm not saying that Trump isn't flawed, but certainly, you know, the famous Ronald Reagan line, were you better off 4 years ago than you are now? I mean, anyway.
Yeah, you know. So
that's my political rant for the day. I'm sorry. sorry to bore everybody with that. So that's kind of what drives me also to write these novels because, uh-huh. And by the way, my novels are not big right-wing screeds. It's not like that. It's just that I want people to think about, because I know they do, what's going on, and readers nowadays are so much more sophisticated, so you can't fool them, you can't give them baloney anymore, and so it's important to give them things that they can really sink their teeth into and come away saying, boy, that was an interesting thought here, I got to think about how that works.
You know, Jeffrey Stevens, our guest today on the Front Porch, and Jeff, I want to get to your books most certainly, but just to follow up a little bit, I'm a big podcast guy. When I go on a walk or do a workout, there's about four that I listen to, and a lot of them are celebrity driven that I listen to. David Spade, Dana Carvey have one called Fly on the Wall that I listen to each week. They have a different guest on. It's all about SNL, so that's fun stuff for me. But the question I'm going to pose to you is, I feel like more and more things that people could not attempt to even think about saying on certain topics in this world, they're now starting to get looser and decide, you know what, cancel me if you want, but I have to share my opinions. Do you get that feeling at all in your circles or in what you pay attention to?
Yeah, I do. I think people are stepping up. I think people are freer to speak. Also, these podcasts enable that. It's not like you're on the network television show where you're so limited.
Right.
I mean, you know, sometimes it's profanity-laced,
yeah,
and all that too, but they really do get to say what they're thinking, and I think it's a good thing. I just wish people would take a minute and listen to each other. I mean, I forget which wise man said, it could have been like Mark Twain or somebody like that, who said, you learn a whole lot less by talking than you do by listening. And so, you know, you already know what your own views are, but at least listen to the other side. But we don't have that. We don't have that here. And, you know, there are presidents in my lifetime, and, you know, JFK was a Democrat, and Reagan was a Republican. But they made you proud to be an American. They made you feel good about this country. And now we've got so many people out there who you know, it's all about corruption and money and all this sort of thing. And I don't know, it's very difficult for me.
Yeah,
my wife tells me I've got to turn off the news in the morning or I'm going to have a stroke.
That's been mentioned, I think, in a lot of households, from one to the other, or maybe to both. Jeff, I'm going to switch gears in a whole different way before I get back to the latest book that you have out, which, by the way, Enemies Among Us is the name of the book. It's part of a new series that began with The Handler, with two characters, main characters in the book, Nick Reagan and Carol, and they're back again, and I know some others you said might be. Well, I want to dig into that a little bit more, but I think it's fitting that we get a chance to visit for a second time after a couple of years have gone by in these new books are coming out, because it is Masters Week, and I know you're a huge golf fan and golf in your family. It had a slight delay on the first day, but they did get underway. It looks like the weather's going to cooperate. So a tradition unlike any other, Jeff. Are you excited to – do you watch golf? Do you watch the Masters?
Yes. Let me say a few things. First of all, you know, I thought they delayed it so that we could have this interview without being interrupted.
Good call. I made a call for you, Jeff. That's what happened.
I mean, I watch a lot of different sports, obviously, as many people do, but I am a Masters junkie. Of all the sporting events of the year, believe this or not, people think, you're kidding me, really? More than the Super Bowl? More than the World Series? Yes. The Masters is my favorite week because of the tradition, because it is the tournament where, as they say, it's the one major where we go back to the same course every year.
Right.
I had, and I hate to brag, but I had the privilege of having played there once. I had a friend who did me a big favor and gave it to me as a Christmas present, and he and I went down there and played with a member. And it was like going to the Vatican. I mean, it was like it was magical, and it was really some great experience. And you know, I love it. And so I have a friend coming over today I shouldn't say this on the air, I guess, but he's bringing a bottle of bourbon, and we're going to watch the Masters this afternoon, and we'll behave ourselves. But in addition, as I mentioned to you earlier before we got on the air, I have two sons, and my younger son was born with an unusual birth defect that required the amputation of his right leg above the knee when he was four. So he wears a prosthesis, and he's very well-adjusted, and he's very athletic, and he wound up being a big guy. He's like 6'2½". And he's a terrific golfer because, obviously, that was a logical game for him to play. It wasn't going to be a sprinter. So anyway, so the last couple of years, the USGA has had a tournament called the Adaptive Open, and it is a true U.S. Open, but it's for people with various challenges, and they have eight different categories. And one of them is an above-the-knee amputee. And so Trevor's been in that, and he competed, and he did really well the first couple of years. Well, the thing has become so big. It was first 2 years at Pinehurst. It's become so big that this year they have qualifiers around the country because thousands and thousands of golfers with various challenges want to try and compete, and there are only 96 spots, and eight of them are given to last year's winners. So that leaves only 88 places. And anyway, so for 2 years, as I say, it was at Pinehurst. We played at number 6, which was really a lot of fun. The people there, I got to tell you this, Rocky, they were so spectacular, so supportive. The volunteers, everything, it was just beyond words. And this year, the U.S. Open is being played at Pinehurst, so they didn't want to have two U.S. Opens at the same venue, so we're coming out to Kansas.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to Newton, where I understand your wife went to your high school.
Exactly.
And it's going to be at Sandy Creek, but now what happens is Trevor has to qualify, and so his qualifier is, I think, in 2 weeks, and I am his caddy. And so I'm going to caddy for him out in New Jersey as he tries to get a good enough score to get out there again. And if we do, I'll go out with him to Kansas and see you guys, and hopefully he plays well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
That is,
and golf is fun. Even my wife, who never played a round of golf in her life, she likes to watch golf because she considers it a very peaceful sport to watch. You know, you could do other things while you're watching golf. You could read a book. You could check, you know, catch up on your newspaper, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But it really is, and it's so beautiful, and the grounds are beautiful, but there's nothing like Augusta. Augusta is...
We will get more thoughts on the Masters and on golf coming up with Jeffrey Stephens, our guest today on The Front Porch. And now we continue our conversation on The Front Porch with Jeffrey Stephens.
You know, anyone who's never been there, just go there to see the Masters. It's unbelievable, that course.
Yeah, that is a dream to get a chance to be on the grounds, let alone get to play it. I have to ask, what was your favorite hole after watching it all these years to actually play it? Did one stand out above the other, or was it just
very
heavenly,
very
everywhere?
Much so.
Okay.
Very much so, and I'll tell you the story. And by the way, the other thing people should know, if you're golfers out there, one thing, if you've never been to Augusta, it doesn't show up on TV. It is a very, very hilly course.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like it, but it's a bear to walk, and that's why it's so tough on Tiger Woods, because there are certain courses you play that are flat as a pancake, like Bay Hill, for example, in Florida. I've played there, and, you know, Arnie's course, it's just flat. I mean, it's Florida. But this course goes up and down, and so the rain that came and went away today gives Tiger the opportunity to finish his first round today. If he had to play 36 tomorrow, he would have been done. Unfortunately, I hate to say that because I'm a fan and I love to see him playing. But anyway, what was the other? Oh, my favorite hole. So here's the story. So I'm on 11, which is the long par 4.
Right.
And so I get up to the tee and I stripe a really good drive. I played okay that day. The greens are impossible to putt. I actually had a 4 putt that day. But anyway, I hit a really good drive, and I say to the caddy, and these are professional caddies there. I mean, these are no-nonsense guys. And I said to him, you know, wow, I remember on TV, that's just about where Tiger's drive was. How is that possible? And he said, well, first of all, man, turn around. And I turn around, and he said, you see all the way back there about 100 yards in back of us in that stand of trees? That's the tee they play. And then he said, as if to add insult to injury, he said, and by the way, Tiger hit a 3-wood, not a driver. So I was instantly humbled after being so excited at that moment. But it's just a beautiful course. That 12th hole, that par 3, nuts. I mean, it's just nuts. You got to hit the ball. It's almost like you have to hit a dinner plate to stay on that green.
Right.
It's so tight. So anyway, it's a wonderful experience. And I love the tradition. And I love, you know, this morning, I think it was, Watson,
Gary Player and Jack
Player,
Nicklaus.
And of course Nicklaus were going to hit the ceremonial shots. It's just great. It's just great stuff.
Yeah. As I did my morning show, I had a computer up and got to see the shots. And I'll tell you what, they all three hit pretty darn good drives. Gary Player, now 88 years old, and gave his high leg kick like he always does each year. The interviews prior it's a special tradition. I agree. That's what
it really is. And by the way, Tom Watson looked like he really hit the ball. I mean,
no kidding.
The other two guys okay, but I'll tell you, if you want, I know we're off the subject of my books, and my publisher will be mad that I'm not promoting my books. But everyone, it's Enemies Among Us. Go buy it. But I'll tell you Gary Player's story. That's great.
Okay.
I have a very, very close friend who's from South Africa, and so as a result, he knows Gary Player. And so he has introduced me, and I've been in Gary Player's company a couple of times, and he talks more than I do. I mean, you think I talk a lot. Gary Player, it's like you say, hello, Mr. Player, and that's it. You're done. But anyway, he was telling me a story about Donald Trump, and I'm going to tell this. I've told it to very few people, but I've just, because we're talking golf, I'll tell you the tale. He plays golf with Trump. Once every month or two down in Florida. Now, Trump's been a little busy lately, so I guess they've been playing less. But he said to me, he said, you know what? I said, I tell Donald, I gave him some advice, and I said to him, you know, Donald, if you're going to run for president again, what you've got to do is you've got to inject a little love into your campaign. You can't keep dividing people. Some love is important. And I look at him like my eyes are bugging out, and I say, you actually said that to President Trump? He said, yeah, and I'll tell you what else I told him. I said, Donald, if you want to do this, you're going to lose 50 pounds, man, or you're going to have a heart attack. And I just burst out laughing, and I said, Mr. Player, I can't think of another person in the world who could get away with saying those two things without Donald Trump.
That's great.
And remain his friend. But he swore that he told him that. And he's not wrong, by the way.
You're right. Anyway. No, yeah, I agree with that too. But yeah, that's priceless. that's fantastic. Jeffrey Stevens is our guest today on the Front Porch, author of several books that all started. What was the first book that you wrote?
Targets of Deception was the first in a four-book series about a spy named Jordan Sandor, who was very closely based on the gentleman that I described earlier. And then I felt that I had done enough of that. I mean, I know some writers could go on with their series, like God bless Lee Child. I mean, he's got 73 Jack Reacher novels.
Right.
I think at some point the formula wears thin. So I wrote a sexy murder mystery called Crimes and Passion, which women tend to love, and which is very gratifying. And then I wrote Fool's Errand, which you and I talked about a couple of years back, about a father and a son and an international treasure hunt. And then when that was done, I said, what do I feel like doing? And I said, you know what, I really miss the spy game. And that's when I went back and I wrote The Handler with Nick Reagan, and now the new book, Enemies Among Us. And one of the things, since if I'll talk about the book, if you don't mind, just for a minute, is there's an interesting thing in our government. And again, I don't want to be preachy. I think people should think about this from time to time. You know, we elect our president through the Electoral College. We elect our senators, our congressmen, our local representatives. But some of the most powerful people in our government are never elected. You know who they are? Forget the Supreme Court. I get that process. The guys and ladies who head up all these key agencies, Social Security, the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, those are all political appointments. So you take a minute, you stop and you think, wow, you're talking about people who run agencies who have hundreds of thousands of federal employees under them, and they have no accountability to us in the public. And very often, unfortunate to say, I shouldn't say very often, there are times when the people who are appointed are not qualified for the position. Now, if you ran General Motors, let's say, Rocky, and let's say you were in charge, and let's say the president of General Motors retired, and they said to you, Rocky, I want you to pick a new president for General Motors, I would think that the first thing you would say is, well, give me a list of all the executives in the company, and let's see who's performing well and who's got experience and like that. You wouldn't just say, hey, you know, I remember that writer, Jeff Stevens in Connecticut. He was a really nice guy. I think I'll put him in charge. That would be ridiculous by any standard, right? I mean, I don't know anything about running General Motors. But they get these people who have never been in the business that they're now going to be in, and they put them at the head of this incredibly powerful organization with all of these employees underneath. I think that's a little weird if you stop and think about it. And we've had some good heads of CIA and everything like that. But, I mean, take, like, for example, a guy that I really, really respected was George H.W. Bush, Bush Sr. Uh-huh. He was a congressman, and then at some point he was made the head of the CIA. And he had been a fighter pilot in the Army and in the Air Force, as we all know, and he was a real American hero. Uh-huh. But the question is, I'm not picking on him, I'm just using it as an example. What did he know about the CIA? Did he really know anything about espionage? Why didn't they take somebody who'd been in the CIA for the last 20 years and talk to him about who might be a good person? But they give these things out as political appointments, just like they do diplomats are all political appointments. I know my friend. His name is Joe O'Brien. O'Brien seems like a good name. I'll make him the diplomat to Ireland. Right? Does he know anything about diplomacy? Who knows? So it's a very interesting part of our government that's very rarely discussed. And one of the things I address, and it's not the main topic, but one of the things I address in Enemies Among Us, where the head of the CIA in my novel turns out to be a really good person, a very well-meaning person, but he starts to lean on people just below him who have experience in the CIA, and it turns out they're not good guys. And so without giving away more of the plot, you would see where that could happen. I mean, Christopher Wray runs the FBI. I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I actually don't think he's a bad guy. But does he have the qualifications to be running the FBI? I don't know. But it's an interesting thing because I don't get to say anything about it, even though I'm a voter, and it's supposed to be we the people. And no one ever seems to discuss that. You know what I mean, Rocky? I mean, that no one ever brings this up.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, that's interesting points. And it's great that you dive into these, and it, like you said, not the main topic of your book, but you these side stories get into the weeds for people to, as you said, maybe click something on that makes them think about it.
Right. I mean, that's what I like to do, because also, and some of this has been coming out recently, as you mentioned, about podcasts and about people speaking up more. And thankfully, Congress, you know, is now doing some things now that we've got some people in control that want answers to things. But people who really run this country, I mean, who really runs this country right now? Let's look at that for a moment. I mean, communication is power. You know, there was a time when we were an agrarian society and everything was about farming and raising crops and raising cattle and raising chickens and other livestock, because that's what we lived on. We were an agricultural society. And then along came the Industrial Revolution, and all of a sudden the power was with who ran the factories and then who controlled oil and who controlled the railroads, right? Because you had to transport all these goods. Mm-hmm. Well, we live in an era where it seems like information is power. And when we've got people like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Jack, what's-his-face, you know, these are the people who have tremendous amounts of influence over our lives, and particularly over the lives of young people, and those are the people who run the country. I mean, the people who run the big business, people who run the oil companies, the people who run big pharma. Look at how much big pharma is a part of our lives. I mean, as people get older, the prescriptions they need, the drugs they need, who controls it? Why do they always say you could buy it so much cheaper in Canada, you could buy it so much cheaper in Europe? Why should that be? I mean, we're America. We're the land of, you know, we're the land of freedom and of opportunity. Why are we paying more for our drugs than other countries? Because we are actually controlled in this country by all of these big influencers. And guess what? They're the people who are given millions of dollars to both Biden and Trump. I'm not exempting either one of them.
Sure.
You know, they just had a fundraiser. I mean, these are like telephone numbers. They had a they had this thing in New York, as you know, in Radio City, and Biden raises $26 million or whatever the number was. So Trump says, I see your $26 million and I'll raise you. And he has a big deal at Mar-a-Lago and raises $50 million. Well, guess what? You and I are not giving them that money, right? We're
right.
not giving them $1 million bucks apiece, at least I'm not. And so the fact is that these are the people who really control what's going on in this country. Something else for us to think about.
Yeah, great points and interesting points, too, that, again, I think people sometimes phase out when talk is going about different things and don't want to deal with it, don't want to think about it, but things that need to be thought about. When we come back, we'll talk more about the new book from Jeffrey Stevens on the Front Porch. We return to our visit with Jeffrey Stevens on our final portion of On the Front Porch. The new book is Enemies Among Us. Jeff, I wanted to ask just briefly, the characters like Nick Reagan, how do you get a give a backstory in your mind?
Yes.
For them.
Well, yeah, I think that's important. And sometimes it's a great question, because sometimes there's a backstory that, and I've written enough about it for myself, I don't even include all of it in the book. But I have to know who he is, because as anybody who writes understands, I really have to visualize this person. As I'm writing, I have to see him almost like there's a movie in my head. I have to know. Carol Gellos, for example, is a great example. Carol Gellos is based on a woman that I know who actually served in the military, who was tough as nails, who is an American hero, and is now just the nicest woman. You met her, you would never guess the background. You would never guess. It really is almost comical. But that's who it is. And so I see her loud and clear, because I know exactly who that person is. And one of the fun things in the book is that, you know, in most of these things, it's like formulaic. Like, eventually, you know, Nick and Carol are going to fall in bed together. There's none of this. Carol Gellos is tougher than tough, And if she's going to have relationships, she's certainly not going to have it with coworkers. And so we don't have any of that silly kind of Harry Met Sally stuff. This is about real professionals who say, we can't risk that because we'll put ourselves in danger. Because the last thing you need is to be worried about a personal relationship with somebody you're in the field with. And so these are true pros, and I'm proud of them, and I love the characters. But yes, absolutely, backstory for the villain too. And as a wise man once told me many years ago about writing, it's more important for your villain to be interesting than your hero. Right? I mean, the hero paths are all good. I mean, we all love James Bond. He's bullets bounce off him. He drinks a martini, and everything is good. But Goldfinger. Now, there's a nutty guy, right? Dr. No. There's somebody you got to worry about. And so the more interesting the villain, the more interesting the story. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. You know, you don't think of it, but when you start looking back at books you've read or movies you've seen, as you were pointing out, if there is a good villain, then you root harder for the good guy, too. So, yeah, that's
absolutely. I'll give you the absolute classic example of it, Silence of the Lambs. And Hannibal Lecter is one of the most fascinating characters, and he's grotesque.
Right.
But he's one of the most fascinating characters in the history of Hollywood. And when you think about Jodie Foster, I mean, she's really, in essence, a terrifically bland character. I mean, she's out there, she does her job, she's competent, but is she interesting? I mean, if I said to you, keeping aside the fact that he might want to eat your liver, but if I said to you, you and I could go out to dinner tonight and we could go with either Hannibal Lecter or Jodie Foster's character, who would you want to go with?
Yeah, no.
I'd go with Hannibal Lecter, 100%, right?
100%. Yeah, he is the most interesting thing in that entire movie. There's no doubt about it.
Billy Joel said in the song, I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints. I mean, it's axiomatic that for us, and I saw a great special the other night, and I just happened on it, so I don't even know what it was because we watched it from after it began. But this, I guess he's a professor from UCLA or something in movies, and he was pointing out how all these movies have these similarities in how they're developed, but the hero path is almost always the same. You know, we meet the hero, he's got some sort of issue, like it's the detective who's an alcoholic, who's been divorced, the quintessential thing.
Yeah.
And then he runs into some conflict and eventually has to pull himself together and he's got to defeat the villain. And so the hero path is pretty clear. It goes all the way back to, the Greeks when they first invented drama. Meanwhile, the villains, the Joker and Batman's kind of a dull guy when you come down to it, but the Joker was fascinating. So it's very important. Yeah. And so what I tried to do in The Handler and Enemies Among Us, I really concentrated on that, and I feel that The Handler, which is the name, that's the nickname given to this terrorist, I think he's quite an interesting guy, very evil, and yet, he can also be charming. Those are the qualities you say, sure. Wow, that makes a man dangerous.
Yeah, that's very true. This is the second book in the Nick Reagan series, The Handler, and now the new one, Enemies Among Us. Is there one in the works? Is this something you'll want to continue following, Nick, or are you ready to shift gears?
No, I am. I'm working on putting the plot together because I can write pretty quickly once I have the whole story in place. In the meantime, I had also, along the way, written a novel and then a sequel about a lawyer in New York going in a completely different direction. And so we're searching around for a publisher for those. So I may be going in that direction, too. But, yeah, I like the Nick Reagan character, and I like what they do. And I think that the way the book ends, people will see at Enemies Among Us that it really calls for maybe yet another book in the series. So hopefully there'll be enough interest where I'll do that.
Quick question before we kind of wrap things up here. Writing the book about the lawyer that you're working to get published, was that easier or tougher writing about something you know so much about?
It was easier. It was definitely easier because when I do these espionage novels, I do a lot of research. When I wrote about a lawyer in New York City, I mean, I knew every restaurant I was writing about. I knew all the locales. And obviously, I knew the rules, because there's some courtroom scenes and all that. And so it was actually kind of fun to do it. Now, you've got to come up with something new under the sun. You can't just give them another Perry Mason story, so there's got to be something interesting, and I've tried to do that, I hope, works for people. But, yeah, it's just easier. You know, as they say, writers should write what they know about. I mean, I could never write Harry Potter or the Avengers or anything. I don't have any facility for sci-fi or for, you know, those kind of characters, and it's not in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. But if I'm writing about government, espionage, suspense, lawyers, you know, that kind of thriller, you know, I'm comfortable there, and I think that's where writers should be, because you could pretty much tell when writers are faking it. And as I said earlier, Rocky, readers today are so sophisticated. I mean, I'll just say, in one of my earlier books, it was a scene where the main character had this shootout at the end, and when it was out for, you know, like it hadn't been published yet, thank God, and one of the people wrote me back, who's one of the experts that I wrote, he said, that gun only has 6 in the magazine and 1 in the chamber, that's 7, and you had him fire 8 shots, and I had to go back and rewrite the scene.
So
people know.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, too. Jeff, people that want to find the book, or is there a certain place you would like them to buy Enemies Among Us?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that. Look, I always say support the local bookstores. Jeffrey Stevens, there's a PH in Stevens if you're looking for me. You could always buy on Amazon. It's on sale. I have to admit, we're having a special now right now. If you're a Kindle user, I think it's $1.99 still. Mm-hmm. And the hardcover is on sale for Enemies Among Us. And if you want to know more before you spend the money, you could go to jeffreystevens.com, and you'll see all the books I've written, some of the other interviews I've done, including with Rocky, and all that. And you could get synopses of the books and all that sort of thing. So I hope people take a look. I hope if they read it, they like it. Get in touch with me through my website. I love getting feedback. Even if you don't like something, I love to hear that. I only want to get better at what I do. And if you like it, that's always nice, too.
Yeah, very cool. Jeff, I wish good luck to your son and qualifying, and it would be great if you get to Newton, Kansas. If there's any way possible, I would come over and maybe watch a few holes and get a chance to meet you in person.
Oh, man, I would love, if we get there, I'm coming to see you. Don't worry about that. You're not going to get rid of me. But anyway, thank you to everybody. God bless everyone. God bless America. I think that, you know, we got to get back on the right track, but we've done it before, and we will do it again. I am confident of that.
Yeah. Preach it well for us, Jeff. And
thanks, Rocky.
And enjoy your bourbon in the Masters this afternoon, okay?
Thank you very much.
Take care. That's Jeffrey Stevens, our guest on The Front Porch.